You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mash Those Buttons Show, where we cover games, community, culture, and everything in between. Today we are going to be talking about the Xbox Series X Showcase, and not just the games that were showcased, but what the showcase showed us about the next generation of consoles, at least from Microsoft's side. And we're also going to talk about Streets of Rage 4, because that came out about a week or so ago. This is episode number 10, and we're recording for the week of May 11th, 2020. Before we get started, I'd like to welcome any first-time listeners. My name is Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the games industry public defender and the scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zelenkevich.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
And I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen to the Mashes Button Show, and also want to thank and welcome back any returning listeners, as well as give a very special thank you to our supporters on Patreon and our Twitch subscribers. If you enjoy the show and you want to keep up with what's going on with us, you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. We're trying to get that account to 1K followers right now, so if you can spare a follow, we would definitely appreciate that. And we'd also have love to have you join us on Discord, which is mash.gg/Discord, where you can meet myself, Nick, other hosts from the network, and get involved with the Mash Those Buttons community. This week, we finally got to see some Xbox Series X gameplay, quote-unquote. no, but seriously, the Xbox Series X showcase was, in my opinion, better than the Xbox One showcase. I think it went much better. If you remember way, way back in, what was it, 2013? That the Xbox One showcase had, did it have two games, three games?
Oh, it had Madden. Yes.
It had Madden. I'm pretty sure it had Forza. But other than that, I can't remember if it had any other games, because they were so busy talking about the media features and talking about the fantasy football and stuff like that, because they're like, yeah, the gamers are going to buy it. Oh. We want the normies. And that didn't work out too great.
I had forgotten about that, and I was feeling better about life for a moment there.
No, I would definitely say that Microsoft has learned their lessons. And by learning their lessons, I mean getting rid of the former head of Xbox and putting Phil Spencer in as the head of Xbox, because they didn't talk about any services, any features. I mean, we already know about the hardware aspect of the Xbox Series X, but all they did was showcase games. That was it. So they know what's up. Now, I enjoyed the showcase. There was a lot of complaints online that I saw of people not enjoying the showcase and complaining about what they saw. And some people were complaining about the lack of exclusives because, you know how Microsoft does their showcases. If it's a game that's going to be on multi-platform, they'll generally say world premiere. And if it's not, they'll say exclusive. I don't think there was a single game that said exclusive on it.
No, but they alluded to the fact that the Microsoft studios that would be doing the exclusives, there will be another presentation just for them. So, I mean, it was a short presentation, like not even a half hour. So what it seems like they're doing is, rather than hit you with like a full hour's worth of content, or, you know, even, you know, sometimes 2 hours worth of content, it seems like they're breaking this up over a few presentations, because they've got time. You know, they don't have like a main, like with E3, you have that main event, like this is the one time we're going to be presenting all of this, so let's do it. That's not happening now. So they've got time and, you know, different venues and ways to do that. So yeah, they're spreading it out over a bit, and there's no reason not to. There's no reason for them to throw everything at once. You know, let the hype build over time. You can kind of focus each presentation on a certain topic. They could very easily do their you know, their other non-gaming features with your fantasy football and all that stuff as a single presentation if they wanted to make it like three or four out of a series or whatever. And, you know, slip that in there if that's something they wanted to do. But, yeah, for I think for what they focused on, they did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I... Hold on a second. Yeah, I have no problem with them not showing a bunch of exclusives. What they're really focusing on, I think it just shows their strategy overall, right? Like, they're not relying on exclusives for this console to sell. Because I think they already know that they're not going to win that game. Like, Sony has spent the last two, almost three decades really cementing themselves with those high-tier exclusives, you know? And it's going to take Microsoft a while because they've been trying to get their like their exclusives to Sony levels since, I want to say, at least the Xbox 360. At least the Xbox 360. Even though the Xbox, in my opinion, did have some good exclusives, like, it's still not touching, like, you know, the... So, I mean, Sony has exclusive titles that they're not even using anymore, like Jak and Daxter, you know? They're not even really pumping out new games, you know? So, yeah, they're not really focusing on that. I'm pretty sure the studios that they have now are working very hard to get them quality games or not exclusives, but, like, you know, first-party titles of that nature. But for now, it looks like the strategy behind this Xbox Series X is that, sure, these games you can play on other consoles or either other platforms, but between the consoles, you're going to have the best experience on Xbox. That's what they're really aiming for. And I think that's a strategy that can work as long as people buy it. That's the other factor. The PS4, I would say, definitely won the previous console generation. Hands down. But it wasn't just because the PS4 was that much better than the Xbox. It was because Xbox stumbled hard early on and more people bought PS4s. And then when their friends went to go get new consoles, you get the console your friend has, which is PS4. You know, that's what was happening. And the people who I know who play Xbox primarily, it's because their friends primarily played Xbox. So, yeah, like, Microsoft, I think they have one part of the strategy in a good place, which is to make sure that the best experience for these games on console is going to be on the Xbox. But the next is just getting people to buy it. You know?
Yeah, but at the same time, though, like, now that a lot of games are going cross-play with the various platforms, that strategy is kind of out the window. That, you know, it's like, oh, I don't need to get a PlayStation just because all my friends have PlayStation. If I'm able to play Fortnite with them on my Xbox, you know, if I'm able to play, is Call of Duty, is that cross play yet?
To a degree. I think, I'm not sure if you can play with the Xbox players. I think you can play with PS4 players. I'm not sure. I played Modern Warfare multiplayer like twice, and then I always uncheck the box for console players.
Because that's the thing, is that if they can continue to successfully pressure Sony into, you know, making more and more of, you know, more and more games being crossplay, then that cuts that out completely. And then it becomes down to individual choice. It's like, yeah, you know what, I can get, and obviously, like, console exclusives will, you know, still, obviously those won't be crossplay. But at the end of the day, it comes down to, like, hey, if I can play, because it happens where it's like, you want this console because it's got this game, but I need to get this console because all my friends are playing on that one. What do I do? Well, you've just mitigated that one because you can get the one console and do both. You know, I think Microsoft puts himself in a good position.
Yeah, you're right. Because if the crossplay, you know, continues to proliferate, then Microsoft is in the better position because, like, okay, well, my friend got a PS5, but I want that 120 frames per second at 4K. I'm going to get myself an Xbox, you know? So I think that things are looking up for Microsoft right now. I'm waiting to see how they execute, waiting to see how things go. I think one of the biggest problems that both Microsoft and Sony are going to have to face is the perception of the perception of a console generation and what that means when you're getting a new console. I mean, I've talked about it so many times at this point, I sound like a broken record. But the way you experience console generations before is over. it's over. It's done. Like people, like they, it's usually like a cut, like, you know, new console comes out, new games are coming out for the new console, old console is getting the leftovers. That's not happening anymore. I don't know if it's going to happen on the Sony side. Like, I don't know if new games coming out on the PS5 will also be able to play on the PS4 the way that new games coming out on the Xbox Series X will also be able to play on the Xbox One, which we're going to get into. But, you know, from the Microsoft perspective, it's like, I know that they already said that they're not mass producing a bunch of Xbox Series X's because they're not expecting them to sell that fast when they first come out, which probably means it's going to have a high price tag from a console perspective, $500-$600 based on the hardware that's in there. But that's okay because you can still buy the new games. And then when you get, when it's time for you to get the new console, boom, you could just play it on the new console and you're fine. And another thing, I think that people expect, you know, big leaps, big graphical leaps. And I don't think that's going to be a thing of the, that's a thing of the past now. I think from a, Microsoft's plan is to probably have a new hardware every 4 years or so.
Yeah. I already saw people complaining that the graphics weren't what they were expecting. And I think part of that might be that it's the age old of, you know, if everything's so high quality, it's hard to replicate that through a presentation because you're, you know, whatever screen you're watching on, especially if you're watching it on your phone or something, like there's limitations there. But at the same time, right, you're it's only a half step jump. We already had the, what was it? The Xbox, what was there?
The Xbox One X.
The Xbox One X. You know, we already had that. If you compare this to like the launch announcement of the Xbox One, there's, you know, you can see the significant jump, but when you look at that stuff, it's not as big. And I know one of the things too is what yesterday Sony released the Last of Us 2 trailer, and I saw people comparing some of the graphics in these to that. And again, that was actually like a, I mean, that was pre-rendered cinematics. So I mean, they're, you know, it's a lot of this was in-game footage, so it's not necessarily an apples to apples thing, but it's, you know, I think it's because it's not as big a jump. It's hard for people to see exactly what they're doing. They're not wrapping their mind around the console transition the way they should be.
But this is a, I think this is uniquely a console gamer problem because, so first of all, one of the problems is that the graphics you saw, the end game graphics you saw, you can find on Twitch right now because PC graphics already look like that. They do. The PC graphics already look that way. So, you know, if you're watching somebody on Twitch play a game, like let's say you were watching somebody on Twitch play Red Dead Redemption on PC at the highest settings, you know, it's you're not going to be wowed by what you saw because you've already seen that level of graphical fidelity. New consoles are like, so graphic improvements are going to inch forward, right? When I see, like, so NVIDIA is going to be releasing the RTX 3000 series soon. And I'm not expecting to see a massive jump in graphics quality. I'm not expecting to see that. Even when I have a 2080 Ti, and when I bought that, I wasn't expecting for my games to look like, go like from trash to amazing. And I went from a 1070, not even a 1070 Ti, not even a 1070 Ti, like a 1070 to a 2080. Ti, what I did expect is what I got: performance improvements. Now, it did, the games did look better, but you know, compared to the way it looked, the games only looked like slightly better, a little bit better. But the performance is what actually mattered, and that you can't translate that to a trailer. It's hard to translate ray tracing to a trailer. Like, so for a perfect example, Control, right? They show ray tracing and Control. And when you're looking at the trailer, it just looks like, oh, better reflections. And they're explaining how the ray tracing works in the trailer. And it's like, okay, why would I give a fuck about reflections? You know why you give a fuck about reflections? When you're in a dark area and you're walking through and you see somebody to your left, scares the shit out of you, and you shoot the window, only to realize it was your own fucking reflection. That is when ray tracing matters. You know, like, you can't really translate that experience.
It's, you know, it's kind of like the HD upgrade that we all went through like 10 plus right. years ago, where you, exactly. you see the commercials for the HD TVs on TV and you're like, it looks like a nice TV, whatever. And then you actually go to like Best Buy or whatever, and you see the wall of TVs, and you're like, holy shit, that football game looks amazing. And then yeah, you're exactly. like, you know, and then you're like, oh, now I get it. Like, I think it's one of those things where when you actually see the games and the demo stations in the stores, when we're allowed to go back to stores, that it'll hit you like, oh, okay, this is worthwhile. This is what the appeal is. You know, I don't know if you'll have the $600 or whatnot, whatever it winds up being to shell out for it, but at least you'll understand like, okay, I see why this is something to aspire to. Cause yeah, like, I mean, how many TVs even nowadays can do the 120 frames per second?
Exactly. That's one of the harder things to translate when they say the Xbox will play 4K at 120 frames per second. First of all, you're not going to give a shit about 4K unless you have a 4K TV. You're not going to see the difference. That's like, you know, I didn't care about having high resolution besides 1080p until I got a 1440p monitor because I just upgraded it. I didn't think I was going to care about the resolution. Yes, it fucking matters. It matters. Yes, you know. But then the 120 frames, like, these trailers are playing at 30 frames per second. You know, it doesn't matter. And then unless you have played games at a higher frame rate, you're not going to know the difference. Like, I don't know how many players I've talked to that I'm trying to explain to them that if you're going to play like Overwatch or a multiplayer shooter, if you're going to play competitively, you need to be at least 144 frames. It makes a difference, and people don't believe it. People will play at 60 hertz, 75 hertz, and think, oh, it's no big deal. Yes, it does. Like, literally, so for Overwatch, for example, I can stop enemy Reinhardts from shattering because I can see that many more frames ahead. You know, like, if you look at Earth Shatter at 60 frames per second, it's like he says it and his hammer hits the ground. But if you're looking at it 144 frames per second, your eyes will literally register him pulling, cocking back the hammer and pushing the hammer back down. Do you know how many shatters I have like stunned out? You know, that's how that happens. It matters. And so Dirt 5 is one of the games that they showcase, and they're like, oh yeah, this game's gonna play at 120 frames. I'm like, that's fucking awesome, because it's a racing game. And I'm not even gonna, I am gonna get a Series X, but I'm gonna play Dirt 5 on PC, so I'm gonna be playing at 144 hertz. And I'm like, it's awesome that the Xbox players will be able to play at 120 hertz.
I was just gonna call you Neo, the way you're like seeing like bullets in real time and shit.
Yeah, but, you know, I think a lot of those performance-enhancing features, without those performance enhancements, it's just hard to relay until you actually see it. And everybody's a doubter, like, well, you know, I don't need 120 frames per second. If you're playing at 120 frames per second versus if you're playing at 60 frames per second and somebody on the other side is playing at 120 frames per second, that's like you using a regular Xbox controller and them using an Elite controller. It makes a difference.
How much does the Elite controller cost?
Apparently $150. We're going to get into that in a minute. The one thing that I thought was interesting is that they have this thing called smart delivery. You would see that tag kind of come up on the games when they were showcasing them. And smart delivery essentially just means the games will play their best on a respective hardware. This is not like a new technology or anything like that. You know, and it's like play anywhere on steroids. Like, essentially they're telling you, if you buy the game once on the Xbox or the Xbox ecosystem, I think that means you will also be able to play it across, which is, now that's interesting, because right now play anywhere only counts for Microsoft Studio games. So if you buy a play anywhere game, like, let's say you bought Bleeding Edge recently and you buy it on the Microsoft store, you can also play it on Windows PC from the Xbox store. But third-party games did not have that feature. So I wonder now, if you buy these third-party games on the Xbox store, will you also be able to play them on PC? That is a game changer, in my opinion. That's a big deal, in my opinion. I'm curious to see what that means. But another thing it means is that it'll play best on the respective hardware. So that means if you play it on the Xbox One, it's basically going to play two Xbox One specs. If you play it on Xbox One X, it's going to play the Xbox One X specs. And if you play it on the Series X, you're going to get the best experience. Like for Dirt 5, again, you're going to get the 120 frames per second. You're going to get the ray tracing if it has it. I don't know if Dirt 5 has it. You're going to get the fast loading. Like they had, I forget his name, but they had somebody who was working on Dirt 5. He says, you can basically just start up the game and start playing. Like that's how fast it's going to load on the Xbox. So I'm like, cool. But yeah, I mean, this is essentially like being on PC and changing your performance settings based on your graphics card. You know, that's basically what it's doing. And they're calling it smart delivery. I'm like, why did you call that? But I guess they have to come up with some type of buzz term. So they don't have to constantly explain like, yeah, it's going to pare you down if you play on the Xbox One. But that's fine. Go ahead.
If I buy the game physical copy, and if, you know, and I can put it in my 1X, I can put it in my, you know, I can put it in my what's the new one? The
Series X?
The Series X. Yeah, I can't keep track of all these damn names. But if I put it in my 1X, I put it in my Series X, that's great. But if I take that and put it in my PC, what kind of drive do I need to read that? Is it just going to be a regular like Blu-ray drive or?
I wonder if it's going to register the game to your account maybe somehow. But that, I mean, then that you come across a different kind of problem with game sharing. Like, oh, I have the physical disc. Let somebody borrow the game. They play it on their Xbox. You know,
didn't Sony have this problem that they were like, oh, like you can have like two, like you can like link a game to like two accounts or something like that. Like, cause I know people were saying the same thing. Like, oh, like, or even then, like I have a house with like eight children and they all have their own Xbox account or whatever. How do I let them share the disc or so, you know, among the accounts if it's tied to one, a one-to-one thing. Like
I know early in the Xbox One's, well, actually even before it launched, Microsoft had a plan because remember they were going to make you register the game with your account or with your Xbox, and they had a system that they were going to have in place for you to actually share games with people. And according to one engineer, he was really sad that it didn't make it because it was apparently really good. So maybe they paired that idea. I mean, this is all speculation, but I don't know. I would imagine that if you have it on your account, somehow you'd be able to download it, but I don't know. I'm curious to see how they do that.
That would be my guess if that is the case. Yeah.
Right. Or they could just say smart delivery only available on digital titles. They could do that too. Because that's how Play Anywhere works now. Like if you buy a physical copy of a game, it's not Play Anywhere.
Right. But it might be the kind of thing too, where you buy the physical copy of the game and then you get the digital copy also.
Maybe they give you a key for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to register that. But then that's also, you buy one game, you get, like, that's two people per game if you want to. Some people will do that. Like, they'll split the game. Like, dude, let's split $30. You get the key, I get the physical disc, and then we'll go from there.
But it might be the kind of thing where they're willing to risk people doing that because they know they'll get more people who are like, oh, I can play this between my Xbox and my PC. Like, yeah, that's awesome. And so it's,
right, yeah, you know,
it might balance out in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was no Halo Infinite. They said there's going to be an event for Halo Infinite coming in June. So I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the next chapter of Halo, especially with, you know, them building their own engine for it. I just want to see what they're going to do with it. I do know they're trying to stretch it out a little bit because this was, you know, they had Halo 4, Halo 5, which those, like, you know, Halo 4 was the beginning of a new trilogy. Halo 5 is your Matrix Reloaded. And then you're expecting for that trilogy to end. Which is why I'm pretty sure this is why they're not calling it Halo 6, you know, because they don't want the trilogy to end. They're trying to stretch it out. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do with it. But I do want to talk a little bit about the games, you know, that they showed. Like I said, they're mostly non-exclusives. They're actually all non-exclusive, I think. So the first one, I thought it was bold for them to start with Bright Memory. And I personally couldn't believe that it was Bright Memory because I'm like, man, this game looks like Bright Memory. I can't believe did somebody rip off Bright Memory and then like make it for the Xbox, or did the Bright Memory guy know about this game and rip it off of this guy? And then at the end of the trailer, it's like Bright Memory Infinite. I was like, oh shit, they actually, it is actual Bright Memory, which looks pretty fucking awesome. And I think it's just impressive that was a one man team. So for those who don't know, Bright Memory has been on PC for a while in early access. And it's $10, and I think it's one level, and that's it. But, I mean, one guy made it, and the fidelity is incredible. I think I'm going to play through it and then maybe talk a bit about it on the next episode. Don't quote me on that, but that might happen. But, yeah, that is a first-person shooter that looks very interesting. Like, you go from, you know, from shooting guns to using weapons. Like, it's pretty dope. So I thought that was cool. Dirt 5, like we talked about, and this actually looks like Dirt proper, right? So Dirt 4, I was pretty pissed about, because Dirt 4, and don't get me wrong, I don't mind simulation rally games, but that's not what I buy Dirt for. I buy Dirt for the arcadey rally games, and Dirt 4 was not that. Dirt 4 was way more simulation, like to the point where, oh, here's a level, you know, it's so foggy out that you literally cannot see in front of you. You have to listen to your guide. And if you don't know how to listen to your guide, you're not going to make it. You know, it's that style simulation. I guess they did that because they had a lot of success with Dirt Rally and Dirt Rally 2, I think. But Dirt 5 actually looks like a Dirt game proper. Actually, it looks like they realized they were getting their ass handed to them by Forza Horizon. And it was like, nah, just make that with Dirt. And I'm totally okay with that. To be perfectly honest with you, because that's what it feels like. There was a space flight sim game called Corvus. I don't know if it's called Corvus Rises 1 or if that's just the marketing tagline. But it looks like a space flight sim game.
I don't know. After Anthem, any kind of like singing title I'm hesitant about.
I don't think it's Corvus. I think it's Corvus, isn't it?
No, I think it's... It looked like Chorus to me, like it was just a very stylized U to look like a V. Because I think
if it's that stylized, I'm just gonna think it's a V. Like I thought it was Corvus. Like to be honest with you. So that looked cool. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. I was not interested. Like, so I shouldn't say I wasn't interested in Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. But this looks like a Vampire BioShock. That's what it actually looked like when I watched the trailer. I was like,
I would say that the first one kind of was in that same vein. It felt to me, Bloodlines is my jam. So this is like I'm really? Hyped for okay. this. Whatever. They could have showed like a blank screen for 2 minutes and I still would have been excited. But I thought it looked good. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a BioShock because you have the different powers in BioShock, and the vampire clans have their different plans, you know, each of their powers and stuff, and there's different ways of going about stuff. So the setting I thought looked accurate to how I remember the first setting kind of being that, you know, dark with like the bright lights kind of illuminating different areas, and you're able to go out and you know, I've seen some other stuff about the game too, as far as how you'll be able to, you know, do different things and whatnot. But I thought it looked fine. I plan on getting it on PC when it comes out. I don't know if I'll have time to play it, but I'll own it at least.
Yeah, like I'm actually interested in the first one now. But it looks like that came back. It came out in 2004.
It's
That's
old,
how I know
yeah.
I'm getting old. That's how I know I'm getting old, because I'm like, didn't that game just come out a few years ago?
No, it's old, and it's one of those games where there was some content cut at the end, and you can find like the fan made patches that put it back in and stuff, and really, really get into it if you want. I think I actually played it. I actually did play it again a few years ago, but that might have been when it came out in 2004. I might have played it like 2012, so that's a few years ago. And it held up at the time. So, I mean, I have no reason to expect that Bloodlines 2 won't be, you know, a quality game here in that lineage. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out too, for sure. I have to see if I'm going to try. Like 2004, that's rough. Going back that far, it's a little tough. It's a little tough. I know for 201X, I ended up going back for a bunch of games like Devil May Cry. Ooh, boy. Tough times. But
I think we talked about this before. Some of the games from like the PS2 era, they get really held up, but I think Bloodlines will hold up. So I would say you should be okay.
Okay. There was another one called The Ascent, which is an isometric co-op shooter, it looked like. I love isometric shooters. I do. Like, and I'm like, this looks pretty dope, so I am definitely on that. Second Extinction, that's looks like a co-op shooter. where you drop down to Earth and you kill dinosaurs. They didn't show too much about it, but they just showed you hordes of dinosaurs charging you. And I'm like, well, I mean, I know they're dinosaurs, but you have guns. So, I mean, what's the problem?
If we were killing robot dinosaurs with a bow and arrow, then killing regular dinosaurs with a gun, it's like.
Exactly. So now one, I have never been interested in a Yakuza game until I saw the preview for Yakuza Like a Dragon. I was like, okay, this actually looks pretty funny. I want to check it out. You know, I want to check this out. So yeah, I think that looked pretty cool. It looks like a silly Yakuza. I got to talk to Pop-Tart about that because she loves the Yakuza series.
So, wasn't the last Yakuza game silly too? Like, isn't that the direction they're going in? Or am I thinking of a different game?
There was one called Judgment, which is like a Yakuza spinoff. And I think that was more serious. Like, I don't think that was a funny game.
Yakuza, wasn't there Yakuza Zero or something? That was the one that was supposed to be all zany and stuff. Like,
I don't know. I thought that was supposed to be like a normal Yakuza game. So let's see. They had a trailer for something called Scorn, and it's like, what is this? Why do people put these trailers out? Like, so you're doing an Xbox showcase. People want to see what the graphics look like. People want to see what the gameplay looks like. And, you know, we didn't get any straight playthrough of any game, but for the bulk of the games, you did see what they looked like in game. And then there was Scorn. I have no idea what this game is about. I have no idea what the plot is. I have no idea what genre of game it is.
It looked like an H.R. Geiger, like, art style, like a Tool video. Like, what? What? Yeah. What? Like, what are you doing? Like, what? Like, it's artistically impressive, but
yeah. I mean, it had the same like architecture that you would see like from like an Aliens movie, like right. Inside the alien ship. You know, people walking around in exoskeletons and shit like that, and it's just not even walking around, but you know, shit's just there. Like, one of them looked pregnant, and I was like, okay, like, why would you put this in the showcase? It's like, what? That was the only frustrating one for me, to be honest with you.
Not why would you put this in the showcase, but like, tell us a little bit more. Like, is it a shooter? Is it is it an isometric thing? It's got very well rendered environments. I mean, the atmosphere was on point for what they were going for, but like, what are you doing? Is it like a Metroidvania? Is it a match 3 puzzler? We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. There's another one called Call of the Sea, which seems like a walking simulator / puzzle game. Like that's what it like, you know, you find yourself someplace looking for somebody and you're walking around, and I don't know. Like it didn't seem like a very, like an action game. There was another one called The Medium, which is a horror game, and it's actually being scored by the same person who did this, the music for Silent Hill. So that looked cool for horror fans. You know, Scarlet Nexus, which is kind of like an action game, but I'm a little spoiled right now. If your action, like, you know, melee game isn't coming from like Platinum, I'm like, is it though? So that's just me being a skeptic, but we'll see. You know, I didn't necessarily like the designs that I saw. It's like you're fighting these things called the Others that are supposedly they were indestructible, but like they're flowers with like, they're not even flowers, they're like vases that hold flowers with legs. It was really weird. I didn't like the enemy design, so we'll see what actually that is. But you know, they did talk a little bit with, like I said, with some of the developers, but for the most part, they just want to show you what's coming to the Xbox, what to expect. And like I said, these are not exclusives, but they are going to be optimized to play on the Xbox. So we'll see how much weight that holds. But I, you know, like I said, some people were complaining about the showcase. Besides Scorn, I didn't have a problem with the showcase. Oh yeah, I literally almost forgot to mention Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Like, that was there too, but they showed gameplay, but they didn't really show anything meaningful. So I'm sure Ubisoft is just holding you know, they're just holding the gameplay, the actual gameplay back for whatever they do over the summertime. And I'm like, okay. To me, there was no point in even showing Assassin's Creed Valhalla. It looks good. From what we saw, from the two-second cuts.
The only issue is that they were touting that there would be a gameplay trailer for Valhalla earlier in the presentation, and then you get to that, and it's not really a gameplay trailer. And so it was a little bit of, like, needless shooting yourself in the foot. But other than that, right. I mean, it looked nice. It looked as good as what we saw last week when they announced the game proper. You know, as I said, we've got plenty of time for them to build hype for all this stuff here. So we can learn more about Scorn. We can learn more about Assassin's Creed. We can learn more about, other games that haven't been announced today. So, you know, it's going to be a long summer.
Yeah. At least we know that we should still have a strong winter. So. Hopefully. And like I said, this is just the showcase was good news for everybody, because since these games aren't exclusive, a lot of them are probably going to be on PC as well. So we should all have a good, all gamers should have a good first year of Xbox Series X.
Exactly.
Just Xbox fans. So let's hop into our only feature for this show. We're going to talk about Streets of Rage 4. I wouldn't say it was highly anticipated, but Streets of Rage as a series is definitely a fan favorite retro game. So there are definitely a lot of people looking forward to it. We have a couple of big fans on staff here, and one of them is Kinder from Droppin' Spicy. So I actually got Kinder and Kurbara to play some Streets of Rage with me and to talk about it. I am here with Corey Tretway and Josh Kinder, both from the Droppin' Spicy podcast. How you guys doing?
Not too bad. How you doing?
All right. And we are here to talk about Streets of Rage 4 from .emu. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. Not .emu, but .emu. Guard Crush and Lizard Cube. Streets of Rage, long time fan favorite, I would say, retro game. I think everybody knows what Streets of Rage is. Or at least have heard about it, but maybe not necessarily played it. You know, I know a lot of people who have never played Streets of Rage.
It's a strange beast. It's one of my all-time favorites by far. I'm super excited to cover this one. But Blazing Bob from Watchport Radio, if you guys know him, he actually had never heard of it. And he was like, is that like Double Dragon? I'm like, yes, Double Dragon or Final Fight, whatever. It was a Sega Final Fight, and it was better.
Kind of surprised he hadn't heard of it, because it wasn't that unknown of a game, and they've had a version released on almost every platform except for like the PlayStation and the N64 generation.
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty popular title. Bob being Bob.
It was widely considered one of the best, if not the best, Sega Genesis game by a lot of people, depending on who you ask.
Well, you don't ask Bob, because apparently it wasn't for him.
And again, there weren't as many Sega Genesis guys as there were Super Nintendo guys. So
that's true. All right, so I guess let's just kind of get into our initial thoughts here. Like you know, Kendra, you're the big fan here. What do you think?
I absolutely freaking love it. I've done a whole lot of just not even before we even decided to do this this portion. I was researching on the development of the game, and I've watched full like hour and a half playthroughs with every single character on mania modes. Like I don't normally just watch playthroughs of games like that just for fun, but I have with this one. I mean, it's beautifully animated. It feels a lot like the old games, but it adds a lot of new stuff. I mean, there's just really so much to talk about. There are three main studios that kind of worked on this game, like you said. Lizard Cube, which kind of did the art direction. And I doubt many people know this name, but they remade Wonder Boy The Dragon's Trap. Did a wonderful job on it. Kind of similar to Cuphead's animation without being as in-depth, you know, really stylized. I say it's similar, but it's just a similar process of development because it's so stylized in a certain way. They do have a very distinct art style. They did a really good job with all of that. And I believe it's pronounced Dotemu. I'm not completely sure on that, but I think that's how I've heard it pronounced a lot. They were kind of the lead group for this whole thing. And the lead game designer, Jordi Asensio, was one of the original old school FGC guys. You know, he was in the fighting game scene way back when in Street Fighter II. So he's been around for a long time, and his input, I think, really, really helped with the direction that they went with this game, especially with like combos and things like that. And then Guard Crush Games came out of nowhere. I didn't really know anything about any of their IPs or anything, but apparently they made a couple of games in a series called Streets of Fury. And they tried to get the Streets of Rage license for those games, but failed. Sega really didn't want to give up the IP to them when they tried to make those games. So they put out their own thing called Streets of Fury. Apparently they were pretty good. And the Streets of Rage 4 engine is based on that. But yeah, they used the engine that they used in Streets of Fury 1 and 2 for the Xbox 360 and basically reinvented it for Streets of Rage 4. And it seems like they did a really good job. I actually watched a couple of segments. I forget what the guy's name is. That was over Guard Crush Games. It was actually Jordy Asensio from Dotemu. He actually took Streets of Rage 2 and Streets of Rage 4 during development, and he would play them with one controller simultaneously to make sure that they paced the same. You know, the walking was the same, fighting was similar, to keep the old school feel of the fighting. One of the things that he said in the interview that I thought was really interesting, really, really cool of him, was that he wanted to differentiate between the things that they didn't do with the original trilogy because of physical limitations and the things that they didn't do as design choices. Mm. In level one of Streets of Rage 4, there's a really cool scene where a car crashes right there at the beginning, and takes out a couple of guys. That was originally intended for Streets of Rage 2, I think, but they were never able to do that. They couldn't put that in the game, and that was kind of a tribute, to the original trilogy. Things like their super moves and not being able to guard, things like that. You know, those weren't done because it was physically impossible. They did it because it was a design choice. It was a difficulty gameplay choice,
Right. Yeah.
And I think they did a really, really good job of separating that line and kind of walking the line between nostalgia bait and modern good indie style, gameplay. I know a lot of remakes, they just kind of take the old game and put a pretty coat of paint on it. And it's like, well, this is okay. But then other games completely remake a game into something entirely freaking different, for better or worse. There's always people that hate it one way or the other. And with this one, it's like they brought the original trilogy into the modern age, so my kids can play this game and not be like, oh, what the hell is this crap? They can look at it, be entertained by the flashy colors and shit, but also have the original Streets of Rage fucking challenge. This is not an easy game. Ask Kura.
Oh, no. I got my butt kicked the first few times I was even trying. And I'm like, let me try this on normal. This shouldn't be too bad. I've died before I'm halfway through the first level. Great. I need to learn how to do this differently, because it's been a while since I've had to worry about 3D movement and everything else, and like direction, being on the right plane, because right here in most attacks, if you're on the plane that the enemy is, it'll hit you. But if you go up a little bit, you can dodge it. That was kind of weird for my brain to get around for some reason, even though I play a lot of games in 3D space right now. It just like, oh, wait, I'm just need to be on the wrong plane so they could miss me.
Right. I would say it's more like a 2.5D kind of thing, older console generations version of 3D, where it's not actually 3D, but you can still kind of move up, down, left, right kind of deal.
I mean, I wouldn't even call it that. It's definitely 2D. It's just, multi-planed,
That's the word. That's probably based, is what I was looking
for.
Yeah,
that's probably what you would go for. I still like to be happy.
There are games that are actually like 2.5D, like Yoshi's Island. Is like, I think so. That would be.
I guess that would be like, yeah, like taking advantage of parallax effects and things like that.
Exactly. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about. But so before I get started, I did, while you were talking, I looked up Streets of Fury. You said he's the same engine as the Streets of Rage, but this is definitely full FMV. This is more like Mortal Kombat. like the original Mortal Kombat than it is the original.
They didn't use this. They didn't use the same engine. They reinvented they took that engine and rebuilt it for Streets of Rage 4.
So you're talking about the combat engine then,
right?
Yeah, but the actual gameplay itself is like full FMV, like it's people. It's like Mortal Kombat. Like so that's actually kind of funny, to be honest with you.
Apparently, it's a decent game. I've never played it. I've never even heard of it, but apparently it's not bad.
I mean, it looks like a decent game. I just have a hard time getting past that, how silly it looks.
Right.
But, you know, now I'm intrigued. I kind of want to check it out. But, you know, with Streets of Rage 4, I did really enjoy the way it looked. You know, there's a lot of retro games that they try to keep the nostalgia factor at 100%. So they keep the retro look and everything like that. And I think this was a nice balance, because like I said, instead of just, you know, going too far retro or completely changing it and bringing it toward the future, it's a nice balance. You know, it's kind of what you would expect from Streets of Rage, but at the same time, they added some new stuff. I think you mentioned like the star attacks and things like that.
Right.
So they definitely made incremental changes to the game. So I really enjoyed the way it looked, and I liked the way it plays, even though at this point I would enjoy a block button, mainly because it just feels like cheese. Some of the attacks you get hit by just feel like cheese. Like if I had a block button or a way to do fast moves, that's kind of like why I like, and I guess we'll get into the characters here in a little bit, why I like Cherry, because her rush attack makes her run. You know,
right?
So it makes it a little easier to maybe even get out of the way of certain attacks and things like that. Another thing I really like is the fact that each level is only like 5 minutes,
right?
You know, and that makes it way easier to swallow when you like bite it at the end of a stage. You know,
yeah,
you come across a new enemy and you die, or you're at the last boss fight for that stage and you die, but the level's only 5 minutes, so it's okay, you just go back and do it again and be better.
Right. Yeah. And they did a really good job of pacing on this, and they took that from the original trilogy. I mean, that was one of the best things about the original games, was the pacing was really good. Even though you couldn't save or anything, you know, it was still cool to say to your friends, I made it to level 5, you know, I made it level 7, you know, things like that. You know, that was a big deal back in the day. And, you know, it was more of an arcade deal, which, interestingly enough, they did add an arcade mode into this, which I appreciate. So you go through with one set of lives, just like the old school Streets of Rage games, and there's no save states and nothing like that. You know, once you get your ass kicked, you're done. You know, that's it for this playthrough. But the thing about this game, though, if you're not a Streets of Rage veteran, it's going to make you fucking rage. It'll make you rage even if you are, just because it plays so close to the originals. I mean, I really don't want to be that guy that says this, but it is the Dark Souls of beat 'em ups. Like, that is what it is. You got to buy an engagement ring for your jumps. You know, once you commit to a combo, you're pretty much committed to that. You use certain tactics to gain iframes to dodge. You know, rather than rolling, it's jumping or using your special attack, sacrificing health, things like that. There is an insanely high skill ceiling to this game, and I love it for that. Because when I started, I wasn't any better than Kerr was, and I just have marathoned this game so much that now I'm able to, at least with another person that's half decent, go through Mania and get almost to the end. I haven't quite made it to the end on Mania, because the literal description of Mania mode in this game is this mode is completely unfair. More enemies than you can handle and all that. They double all the enemies in the game. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely just dumb. And with every difficulty spike as well, special attacks consume more health as well. So that makes things even worse.
Right.
But it's so
funny. And to be clear, with the special attacks, you can do them, but they take a chunk of your health is reserved. And if you get hit while like that part of your health is green, you lose all the health, but you can get it back by doing regular attacks. One thing, I like that there's a lot of, one, there's variety in characters. There's up to 5 characters, well, regular characters, and we'll get into that. But then on top of that, each character has all these combos that you can do with them, which is great. The only thing I wish is that there was like a dojo or something where you can go and just practice combos. Like fighting games have, you know, training modes for a reason, right? So you can get practice and stuff like that. In this game, I felt that was one of the things that were missing that would have definitely been a huge quality of life improvement, where you go into the training mode and you can just try combos out and try. Because, I mean, part of the game is being able to execute certain moves at certain times. Mm-hmm. You know, right. It'll help you tremendously. But the fact that you kind of have to go into each stage and maybe you'll find a combo by accident, you know, and now you're going to spend the next level or two trying to figure out, well, exactly how did I get that combo? And now you got to, you know, actually work on getting good at it so you can execute it well. Right. Like I said, the stage is only 5 minutes long, so it's not that big of a deal, but I just think it would have been a great quality of life.
Yeah, the only thing they have in there is the combo. They have a combo guide explaining how each of the combos you can interact, do them, but it would be nice to have a training one to be able to try out each of those combos.
And even that guide that they have only has, like, certain techniques.
Yeah, know? It's just the basics, and if you don't look at it, then you don't get it. But at the same time, it's really cool because it's a throwback to old school gaming. If you didn't look at the handbook or anything, 9 times out of 10, you didn't know that there was, oh wow, that's a cool mechanic I never knew, because that's just how game design was back then. You know, it's not the best thing in the world, but it's a throwback. The same thing with the training thing. You know, the original games didn't have that. For better or worse, they made that choice, it seems like to me, to kind of make you like seek out that information. You know, we're in the age of the internet. That's a lot easier to do than it used to be. But it's also really cool when you take the time out of your day to go, you know, look at something, you know, go find some kind of cool thing about the game. And you discover, oh shit, that's a whole new technique that I can do. And there are infinite combos in this game as well. They're really incredibly hard to pull off. But once you do them, once you learn them, it's like, holy shit, speed run time, you know?
Right. Yeah. I did like the fact, also the online co-op only supports 2 people. We had 3 and we got a chance to check out the Steam Remote Play. It was my first time actually having a reason to use it. And I thought it worked out great. It's more up to you guys. What did you think about that? Because you were the ones on the remote side of things.
It was all right. Minor input lag. I wouldn't play a fighting game seriously on it. And when action got a little heavy, there was some bitrate problems. Otherwise, it wasn't bad. How was it for you, Kura?
Well, for me, actually, I didn't have really any input lag. Like, literally, when I hit the button, it interacted on my screen. But there was some pixelation, so some of that might have just been down to our uploads and download speeds, possibly, in our regions.
Right. But for the possibly.
Most, yeah.
It was like the same thing that happens whenever you're watching Twitch and their bitrate is set really low, or they don't have a really good upload speed, that kind of deal. There was something else I was going to say. I can't remember. Go ahead, John.
Oh, you mean the difficulty of when we got to 3 players? Like, because when we played 2 players, yeah. Levels seemed fine. We were getting through bosses. We'd have multiple lives at the end. But as soon as John joins in, play on the same difficulty.
Yeah, I don't know if they increase the difficulty per player that is in the game or not. But yeah, definitely. Like, part of the problem is that 3 players, I don't even know, want to imagine what it's like with 4 players, is chaotic. Like, it's super chaotic.
Right.
And the character models are pretty big. So, like, 2 players, I think it's fine. 3 players, you're taking up a lot of space. Taking up a lot of space. So,
and I think a big part of that is the design choice that they made to stay as close as possible to the originals, which are built for 2 players. This game doesn't seem like it was built for 4, you know. It was built to mimic the original games, and 4 people just, you get in the way of each other's combos. You throw somebody that you're meant to throw down the hole. One of your teammates stops them with a punch.
Yeah, and, you lose track of each other in the mess of enemies and players.
Yeah, and there is a friendly fire option. Thank God they added that, because if you turn friendly fire on, there's no way.
We wouldn't have got past the first stage if friendly fire was on. So before we kind of wrap up here, what would you guys think about the character selection? Because each character kind of brings something different. At least that's what it feels like. You know, there's a reason. I think there's a reason to play different characters based on your play style, and even to kind of combo, you know, certain characters together.
Right. I mean, personally for me, I think this is probably the strongest roster they've ever had. to be real. I mean, they don't like take the diversity pill too far, but it's also a really diverse and well light cast. You know, nobody seems out of place. Nobody seems forced. They're really well designed and animated. They all have really distinct fighting styles. And I mean, two of them are a hard callback, but particularly Adam Hunter, who is also a callback from one, plays nothing like his original. He plays completely differently, has a completely different character model, and he looks great. I really liked him a lot.
And he kicks butt.
Oh, yeah, he's really, really fun. And Axel and Blaze still play close enough to their original, you know, that suits old schoolers. But then Floyd and Cherry, they've got super distinct, like super heavy and really light and acrobatic play styles. And then Adam kind of fills the void in the middle. I think the main five cast is great. And then you can unlock literally everybody from the original trilogy in sprite form, which is really, really fun. I mean, it's down to, they don't even have star moves. They just have their original specials from the original games, which blows my mind. They didn't change anything. They just load them in pretty much.
Since you played there, but I want to double check, because I've only played with Adam and Blaze, and both of them, I had no problem killing anybody or feeling like I was contributing. Did anybody feel like they weren't as good or as useful as the rest of the cast?
The only person... who was the person you were playing last night, Kinder? The big guy. What was his name?
Floyd.
Floyd. When I was playing Floyd solo, that's the only character who I did not like playing solo. However, with a group, I think he's way more, because he's like crowd control. Like, I think he's way more valuable in a group setting than when he is by himself. Him and also Axel, I wasn't a fan of solo, to be honest with you.
I feel like Axel is the weakest of the cast as far as actual fighting. Cherry is probably next. She's a lot of fun, but she does very little damage. Personally, I like Floyd so much because he can kill in one combo with a lot of characters other characters can't. And he's got an insanely good reach and the best grab in the game by far. And his specials are really good at CC.
Right. All right. So anybody want to bring up anything else before we head out?
One thing is that music they were playing through that game I was highly enjoying.
Oh, God. How do we not hit on the music? This is the biggest. I could talk an entire episode about this goddamn game right now. I mean, Yuzo Koshiro was an absolute master. The original composer for the series. He was an absolute master. There's some really interesting trivia. Just look at the Wikipedia page for Yuzo Koshiro. It's amazing the stuff that he did to do what he did for Streets of Rage. There's no doubting that. However, Olivier de Rivière, who is the main composer for Streets of Rage 4, along with Kenji Yamagashi, who is one of the Street Fighter II composers, and Motohiro Kamijima, who helped work on the original trilogy, they destroyed it. This soundtrack is amazing. I was listening to it in the car with my younger brother the other day, who is not an EDM dance music or anything fan. And you know, this little 17-year-old kid was like, man, this shit slaps, you know. I mean, so that says something about this soundtrack. It is amazing. It is so good. It's perfect by itself. And the music cues in the game are amazing too. I mean, it's Streets of Rage. You cannot have bad music in the Streets of Rage or it's gonna fail.
All right, well, that's gonna wrap us up here. Thanks a lot, guys, for joining me to talk about Streets of Rage.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We'll see you next time.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us. Thank you for listening. Coming up on next week's show, still a little bit in flux, but I do believe we're going to have early access reports for both Kill Squad and Escape from Tarkov. That might change a bit depending on how the week goes. But other podcasts coming up this week on Matchless Buttons, those are set in stone. We got to Push the Point. We have Double Tap. We have a new WoW Talk and a new Dropping Spicy. So you can expect those, and if you want to subscribe to any of those, or even just figure out what those shows are about, you can go to matchlessbuttons.com, and you can check out all of our shows there. Like we mentioned earlier, if you want to keep up with what's going on with this show, you can follow us on twitter.com/TheMatchNetwork. Nick, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on WoW Talk, our World of Warcraft guild show, and then also on The Torn and the Goblin, our World of Warcraft story and lore show. So check those out.
Yes, and you can find me on Twitter at Joshtradamus, and you can also find me streaming here at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. We're trying to come up with like an official stream schedule. I mean, we do have every other week our WoW podcast will stream, but we have Dropping Spice every week. But I think every Friday we're going to start dedicating that to GTFO because we've been playing that like crazy. So for now, like Friday night cage drops on twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons.
You should call the stream GTIO. Oh, no, GTFI.
Get the fuck in?
Yeah. So they come into the stream.
I'll consider it. Thank you, Nick.
That's for getting your input. Cut. That's getting cut.
But we love to have you join our Discord, which is mash.gg/Discord, where, like I said earlier, you can meet me and Nick. You can hear his corny ass jokes, and you can join the Mash Those Buttons community. And we encourage you guys to reach out to us and ask questions or give comments on the show. You know, we said something you liked, you didn't like. Agree, disagree, reach out to us. Let us know. You can contact us on Discord if you want to, or on our Twitter accounts, or you can just send us an email at contact@mash.gg. And we usually read all of those. So we'd love to have your feedback. And if you enjoy the show and you want to help us out, one of the best ways to do that is to share the show with others and to rate and review it on your favorite podcast platform of choice. If you want to take your support a bit further, you can become a Patreon at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. You can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month. You can gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. For example, for this show, at the $1 tier, we have the cutting room floor. So things that don't necessarily make it into the show for time purposes, they go to the cutting room floor. At the $3 tier, you get early access. At the $5 tier, you actually get exclusive stuff like behind the scenes content. We're going to be starting probably a weekly show called Extended Play, where, because there's just a ton of stuff that goes into the show that we can't, like, we just don't have time to put it in. So we're going to go ahead and put it in Extended Play. So, you know, you get rewards like that for supporting us on Patreon. There's also a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/smashthosebuttons. Like I said, we're going to be working on refreshing the stuff in there soon. And also, you can support by throwing a Twitch subscription our way. Like I said, twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. And with that, you know, we're done. I encourage you to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. And we'll catch you next week.
See you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/themashnetwork, facebook.com/mashthosebuttons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/discord.